Well, Rishi Sunak's over the moon. The DUP should be given space. The rhetoric is soaring like a rocket. Here's the British Prime Minister at the Coca-Cola factory in Lisburn earlier.
If we get the executive back up and running here, Northern Ireland is in the unbelievably special position, unique position in the entire world, European continent, in having privileged access, not just to the UK home market, which is enormous, fifth biggest in the world, but also the European Union single market. Nobody else has that. No one. Only you guys, only here. And that is the prize. I can tell you, when I go around the world and talk to businesses, they know that. They're like, that's interesting. If you guys get this sorted, then we want to invest in Northern Ireland. Because nowhere else does that exist. That's like the world's most exciting economic zone.
Brian Mahan, do you think he likes the deal based on what you've heard there?
Yeah, no, he's doing the hard sell now. He was up in Belfast, he's up in Antrim today, giving the hard sell. And I guess the two kind of key items as part of this deal, one is the green lane, red lane process, and the other is the storm and break.
So all right, well, run us through them in sequence there. Green lane, red lane, this is something that was an ask for quite a while.
Yeah, and I think it's been kind of floated around there for quite a long time. I think the essence of the point is that anything that's in a green lane that's coming from Great Britain into Northern Ireland won't need, you know, paperwork, and all of that data will be shared between the UK and the EU, and it will effectively, Rishi Sunak is claiming, effectively get rid of the border in the Irish Sea. And the red lane, which will, I think, the aim is to reduce it down to about, I think, 5% of trade between GB and NI, would be for those goods that are coming from Great Britain and going on into the single market, right, into the Republic.
And insofar as that's a concession from the European Union, that concession was built on the trust by the UK providing data to the EU so that those trade flows could be monitored.
Yeah, and I think trust is probably one of the key components of what we're seeing over the last day or so. The EU in Brussels and in Dublin here, they have someone in number 10 who they feel, I think, they can trust and do a deal with in good faith in a way I think it's fair to say they didn't feel they could do with Boris Johnson.
No, and the storm and break, as you mentioned there, the trust element there is that it wouldn't be or couldn't be abused as a mechanism. What is it and how does it work?
So effectively, if the EU passes a piece of legislation at the moment, that would automatically apply in Northern Ireland, but the storm and break will allow 30 MLAs to say we don't want this, and that would then set in train a kind of an arbitration process between the UK and the EU. The EU hope, the UK hope, the Irish government hope that that's not used on a kind of a monthly, daily basis, that if anything it's maybe once a year, twice, every couple of years ideally. But it's certainly a concession to the unionists, and I was chatting to a unionist friend about this very issue a couple of weeks ago, and that kind of democratic deficit was something that was really irking them.
Right, and the reaction here in Dublin to it, what has it been like generally? It seems to be quite muted. There's no jumping, cheering, it's all sorted. There seems to be a reaction that is bearing the feelings of the DUP in mind.
Yeah, and I think you saw that in leaders' questions today, where Mary Lou got up and kind of effectively congratulated the government, that everyone was happy with it, but then made the case that there's no longer an excuse for the DUP not to get back into government, get back into the executive. This is the best anyone's going to get. And Leo Varadkar, said, these guys can take their time. No one's going to rush them. Simon Coveney said that. And I think that's going to be the tone from the government, because I think it would be fair to say it would be counterproductive if Dublin was been seen to push the DUP on this.
All right, okay. Well, let's go to Suzanne Breen, the political editor and columnist with the Belfast Telegraph. She's on the line with us now. Good evening to you, Suzanne Breen. Thanks for joining us.
Good evening.
Peter Robinson, a former leader of the DUP, made a lengthy intervention in a Facebook post. He didn't come down on acceptance or rejection, but he certainly had plenty of advice. How much, what's in it first, and what sway will it carry?
Well, he was advising the DUP not to be pressurised into making a quick decision on the new protocol deal, but rather to take as much time as it needed to reach a wise, prudent and defendable outcome. And he was basically cautioning party members about airing their views to the media. He's suggesting that it's done in-house because obviously if there's a lot of different opinions, then that gives the impression of a divided party, reflects a divided party. We have a council election coming up in May in Northern Ireland, which will be fairly important for the DUP. And he said that the party should not be frightened to be isolated in terms of whatever decision that it reaches. But he also said, there was a very telling line, he said that it must consider whether the decision that it makes would place unionism and Northern Ireland on more perilous ground if it rejects the deal. So reading between the lines, I thought that Peter Robinson was very nuanced, but very much in favour of the deal. He is not like Boris Johnson. He is not someone who is poisonous, is setting out to create problems for the people who have succeeded him, Arlene Foster and now Geoffrey Donaldson. He is kind of offering counsel of someone who has been there and done that, counsel to the leadership and counsel to party members.
And as you say there, he advised the party to keep the debate about the Windsor framework within the party. Perhaps a pointed remark aimed at Sammy Wilson and Ian Paisley Jr. maybe?
I think it was very much aimed at Ian Paisley Jr., who came out not that long after the deal was announced and said that it didn't cut the mustard. I don't think Geoffrey Donaldson and the DUP leadership will be too worried about what the North Antrim MP says. They would regard him perhaps as maybe a tad mischief making, but the views of Sammy Wilson really would be important in the party. He would be their main Brexit spokesperson, and also the views of someone like Nigel Dodds, who's been around for a lot of time, who leads the party in the House of Lords, and you know a lot of people in the unionist community and certainly within the DUP will be watching to see how that debate progresses. And certainly if Geoffrey Donaldson found himself on an opposite side of the argument to both Nigel Dodds and Sammy Wilson, then he would potentially be in trouble about selling this deal.
All right, well, let's hear from Geoffrey Donaldson because he was on the 6-1 News on RTE this evening and he struck what sounded like a fairly pragmatic tone on it, but I'll get your judgment on that after this.
The issues of concern that we have, we will take them to the government. We will seek clarity on some of those matters. They include, for example, the application of EU law, how that is managed, and to ensure that we have measures in place that prevent EU law from inhibiting our ability to trade within the UK internal market. What we need to ensure is that any continuation of EU law for the purpose of cross-border trade does not inhibit our ability to trade within the United Kingdom and its internal market. And this is absolutely key for us. I believe that significant progress has been made on this, not least on the movement of goods from Great Britain to Northern Ireland, but there are many other aspects and areas of this agreement on which we need greater clarity.
Suzanne Breen, he's not saying never any application of EU law ever anywhere in Northern Ireland. So are there grounds for optimism for supporters of the Windsor framework there?
I think if it was up to Geoffrey Donaldson alone, the party would most definitely endorse this deal. Geoffrey Donaldson is a pragmatist. He believes in devolution. He believes in power sharing. And I think his whole tone would be setting it up that the DUP's tactics of boycotting Stormont have actually worked. And the party has secured very important concessions from Brussels, concessions that its rival said it would never secure, and the DUP should really celebrate this, be positive and move forward. The problem for Geoffrey Donaldson is that not everyone in his party shares those views. And, you know, the history of unionism is littered with the political corpses of leaders who have made compromises and have been unable to bring their community with them and their party. They have it split parties. And Geoffrey Donaldson, I think, does not want to be a casualty of Brexit or a casualty of the protocol.
And the more
so he has to move very slowly. But the problem with them moving slowly is that it allows momentum to build against the deal, both within his party and outside it, in the form of Jim Allister and the hardline traditional unionist voice.
But I suppose if it's sold as a big win for the DUP, is the argument there, well, change is possible when people said it wasn't possible, let's go for more change, and if you're that successful, you're the man to do it.
Of course there is that argument that will be made. I don't think it's credible. I think that probably the DUP might get the tweak of an odd word. It may get some clarity on points, but I cannot see any serious revision of the agreement. One of the other problems is that the DUP has got 40 documents. I think there's around 40 documents making up this agreement. A lot of them are very complex, and the party does not trust the government. It doesn't trust any prime minister. It has been there, done that, worn the T-shirt of being deceived. It has been made to look stupid, and it really wants get this right.
Right. Geoffrey Donaldson welcomed the storm of break. How much cover does that give him, this where a petition of concern could be raised to offset or at least put into deep freeze changes to EU law that would apply to single market regulations in Northern Ireland?
Well, he has welcomed it, but there are other unionists like Jim Allister that are effectively picking it apart and saying that it may sound great on paper, but it really doesn't amount to more than a hill of beans, that ultimately the government does not necessarily have to act on what Stormont said. And then there is another big question mark on whether, even if the government does act, the British government does act, whether Brussels then has to really do what the government says. So it all, to people that are critical of the deal, it all seems very tenuous, and it looks more like window dressing really than anything substantial.
Right, just a couple of final questions on it then. The DUP went around drumming up opposition to the protocol in Orange Halls all over Northern Ireland. Will a similar effort have to be mounted in order to get support for this if they back it, or will consultation with their own grassroots, their own executive and other levels of the party be enough for that?
Well, even if the DUP doesn't consult in Orange Halls, the Orange Order has said today that it will be consulting its members, that it will be examining the deal. Jim Allister is holding meetings in Orange Halls. He does that regularly. He's holding one in Portadown on Thursday. So even if the DUP doesn't go to those venues, people in them will certainly be dissecting and discussing the deal. And in some ways, by raising the whole profile of the protocol, Geoffrey Donaldson and the DUP have made prisoners of themselves. It was not that big an issue. It is now a completely massive issue in unionism. And even though we have all sorts of problems in Northern Ireland with the economy and with the health service, for unionist voters, this is a massive issue.
And if it came to it, you know, there are differing opinions, as you say, within the DUP, but if the safest option for the sake of party unity was simply saying no to it, is that the option they would take?
I think it is. I think ultimately party unity and the survival of the DUP will be the first focus of the leadership. When Geoffrey Donaldson inherited the DUP leadership, the party was at 13% in the polls. Both the Ulster Unionists and the TUV were ahead of it. He's built it back. It is ultimately now, I think, on around twice that. It's on about 26-27%, and he does not want to risk all that support that he has won back by taking a hard line on the protocol. But if he does take a hard line, I think the problem is for unionism long term. It is not good for unionism with institutions being down. There is a tradition within nationalism of boycott, but if unionists are saying that they don't want to go into the assembly and they don't want to go into the executive, I think long term that very much damages their cause.
Right, but on that finally, and finally to you, how much of a consideration is the big non-protocol issue, in other words, the DUP entering a Stormont assembly with Sinn Féin as a First Minister?
I don't think... There would be a lot of people within the nationalist community and within among Alliance voters who think that really all this protocol is just camouflage for the fact that they do not want a nationalist Republican First Minister in Michelle O'Neill. I certainly think that the DUP finds Sinn Féin's primacy at the polls very difficult to swallow. But to be fair to the party, I don't think that it is the real reason why it's not going back. I think unionist grassroots find the idea of a Sinn Féin First Minister very distasteful. They are used to ruling the roost at Stormont. They are used to being top dog. But I think ultimately, if the protocol issue was sorted, then the DUP would be prepared to go back in to take the position of Deputy First Minister and to try very, very hard at the next Assembly election to win the First Minister post back.
All right, Suzanne Breen, political editor and columnist with the Belfast Telegraph, joins me on the line. Her joining us on the line from Belfast. Now to our panel in studio here. Mary Lou MacDonald, to you, Mairead Farrell, first. She made a statement tonight that said Sinn Féin will also be seeking clarification on the Windsor framework. What issues are unclear? What would you like clarification on, do you think?
Well, I think there's a few things, but I think, you know, the reality is with something like this, something that's as significant as this, and just to be very clear, we have welcomed this framework, and we've always felt that if both parties acted in good faith, that we could, that an agreement could be reached, and that was very important. I suppose, you know, when this kind of a framework is comes about, you do need to take, obviously, a detailed look at it. But these things are never as straightforward as they seem. So I think that's just what any party would do. But we have been very clear that we are, we're very positive in relation to this. We feel that... what we always felt was that it was very important and it was essential that the North was protected as much as possible from, you know, the really adverse effects of Tory Brexit. And that meant, you know, no hard border, ensuring that the economy could work well. And of course, now our focus as well is on having the executive back up and running. So that's where our focus is at this moment in time. I think it's only sensible for any party to make sure that they take a look at the framework and ensure that every aspect of it is understood in full.
All right. Martin Conway, just this could be changes were agreed. The DUP were got back on board, which suggests that the initial draft of the Northern Ireland Protocol was imperfect. Why were we so quick, I suppose, to accept it all those years ago in the Wirral from Boris Johnson?
Yeah, well, look, politics in England at the moment, as much as it's at all possible, has somewhat normalised. Sadly, for the previous two prime ministers, it was nothing but normal. And in fairness to Theresa May, she did her best not having a majority to get an agreement over the line. Boris Johnson then had a majority, but was reckless and didn't have the trust of Europe, didn't have the trust of significant elements of his own party. And certainly the political system in any part of the British Isles or Europe didn't have a trust. So at least with Rishi Sunak, there does appear to be a trust that has been built up over the last number of months. And we are where we are today with an agreement. And an agreement and a negotiated agreement means that there has to be give on all sides. And right, there definitely has been given.
And well, I suppose Boris Johnson's record of dishonesty, and he's one of the few people in public life, you could say that without fear of writ or rebuttal. Yeah. We accepted his word on this as a government From your point of view, why did we accept his word?
Well, you see, we weren't negotiating. It was Europe that was negotiating. And we were working...
But we made a recommendation to Europe. The Irish government made a recommendation to Europe.
With the greatest of respect, Cormac, we made a recommendation based on what we were advised at the time was the best possible achieved outcome from a European perspective. That changed, clearly. It wasn't working. It wasn't being accepted by a significant portion of Northern Ireland. The DUP didn't accept it. So there was an engagement over many months, which included Simon Coveney, Micheál Martins, Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar's Tánaiste, working with Ursula von der Leyen and the Commission. And that negotiation took place behind closed doors. And what we have today is their absolute very best attempt at coming up with something that is workable. Because to be fair, what's good for Northern Ireland is also good for the South. And, you know, it is good for Northern Ireland, it would appear. It's been accepted by the vast, vast majority of business people. And, you know, I'm delighted that Mairead and her party, while everybody has questions, and absolutely those questions should be clarified where it's necessary. And it's great that, you know, Sinn Féin as a party has come into the European project.
And we bring
Mairead
Farrell. We'll bring you back in a moment.
Martin, but anyway.
Michael Collins, what's your reaction to the events?
This is a positive positive outcome after, I suppose, months and months of negotiations going on. It certainly, the issue didn't seem to get any progress under the Prime Ministership of Boris Johnson. It seems to have rejuvenated under Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister. But you know, and it looks like that the agreement, like we say, has seen like Brussels and the EU have come a long way to try and appease those in Northern Ireland, and that is the DUP in particular. And it's time that we sincerely hope that they will accept this. If it doesn't, it'll be a disaster for Northern Ireland, and it will be equally a disaster for the UK and the Republic if this continues the way it is. So it's obviously they're getting time. They've got a lot of time already.
Yeah, what would you say is a reasonable amount of time further?
Surely within the next week to 2 weeks, a decision has to be made. I mean, obviously, they're looking through the document, and not any one of us here have looked through the documents in total. I haven't had the time to do that. But a very good point made today by the Cross Community Alliance leader, Naomi Long, was we need to get back. We need to get back to do the day job that we were elected to do so. And that's what's not been happening in Northern Ireland. There is no government in place in Northern Ireland for such a huge amount of time. It's an astonishing situation that the people in Northern Ireland face. I speak to people in Northern Ireland, I'd say maybe 15, 20 times a week, and any one of them I ask are totally opposed to the fact that there isn't a government in place there. So, you know, the DUP have to take this this very responsibly. Sinn Féin have welcomed it to a degree and are looking into it further, which is fair enough. And we accept that the DUP need a little bit more time, but they certainly cannot look any way negative at this deal.
I think the reality is this is a done deal as far as London, Brussels and Dublin is concerned. We are at post-cabinet briefing there today with the spokespeople for all the three leaders, and that was pretty clear. You know, I think as Suzanne suggested, there might be a tweak of a word here or there for the DUP, but I mean the substantive change that has been made to the protocol, that's it. You know, and if the DUP don't go it back in, that's a much bigger discussion that needs to be had about, you know, how do you get Stormont back up and running if the DUP say that they're not going to participate. But it's also, I think, and again, Suzanne alluded to it, this is a vindication of the DUP strategy. Like, they got a lot of changes, and the Stormont break is not an insignificant piece or an insignificant instrument for them to have gotten. So I would think that Geoffrey Donaldson would surely say this is a massive victory and a vindication of our strategy to his supporters. Now, I'm a political correspondent down in Dublin, so I don't have the same constituency
sure.
he does.
It could also be seen as a vindication of Rishi Sunak's strategy of
absolutely
actually delivering on what he said he'd deliver and entering negotiations in good faith, unlike at least his last previous two predecessors.
Yeah. But I think it's also worth saying, you know, the Commission took a very hardline approach on negotiations when they started first. You know, Theresa May started
the clock on this, the 2-year clock for the initial negotiations, when the British government had done no preparation whatsoever and they were the first country ever to leave the EU. So the European Commission was obviously going to take a tougher line. So even though Theresa May, I agree with Martin, was a bit more kind of, you know, open to discussion and negotiation, she took a very hard line, and then, you know, the subsequent Prime Minister also very different.
There's another factor here.
I just want to bring Mairead Farrell in first, Martin Conway. That point about it being seen as a victory for the DUP and the DUP being given space, is there a danger that the seeds of the destruction of this could be sown in telling the DUP that maintaining a hard line is the right approach?
Well, first of all, just in relation to the protocol and even now this framework, look, it has never been acceptable and it is and continues not to be acceptable for the DUP to not engage with Stormont and to use this as a reasoning not to engage in Stormont. I think that if the DUP have questions and they want to take a bit of time to look at it in detail, then that's fair. But, you know, that should not never be a reason. Well, I'm not going to put a time frame to it because I don't think you need to take a random time frame.
If they decided to take till after the local elections in Northern Ireland, for example,
I think that would be a very, very long time frame. I think realistically, when people are talking about time frames, they're talking for about a much shorter period in time. But the crucial point here really is that this can't, like, you know, the executive needs to be back up and running. The Sinn Féin MLAs, along with a number of other party MLAs, all the other party MLAs are ready to deliver and to work for the people of the North, and that's what the DUP need to do now as well, and it has never been acceptable for them not to engage in that process, and it needs to stop.
It would appear that elements of the ERG are beginning to accept the deal. The gentleman who was a former Brexit spokesperson for the ERG, whose name escapes me, who spoke at Lent on radio.
Steve Baker,
I met him at BIPA, but a guy who has spoke at length about the effect it's had on him personally.
Who went to the extent of apologising for the effect of some of that rhetoric on British-Irish relations.
Yeah, which I think was very welcome. But like, if you're seeing a fragmentation of the ERG, the narrative in the media up until now was that basically the ERG would take their card from the DUP. That now, some may, but it seems that it's beginning to fragment. So it's the ship is sailing, and I think that the DUP would be well advised to absolutely have their consultation, do whatever discussions they have to have internally. But, you know, any kind of a lengthy period of time, I think, would actually damage their position. They're far better off now to realise that this is as good as it gets, and that the people, the vast majority of businesses in the north and indeed south of the border, want this over the line, and they want an assembly up and running.
All right. Well, let's hear from some of the listeners there on this. Sunak is a good salesman, I'll give him that. The irony is this deal is exactly what GB had before Brexit. It's a bit of a joke to sell the good news about access to the EU. The UK may be the fifth biggest economic market, but the EU is the largest economic bloc in the world, says one texter. The Irish government should be concerned when the British government are selling the Windsor deal, as they've renegotiated the protocol and scrapped the EU laws. Also selling the deal is that the Irish Republic does not have the privilege of free access to the two trading areas, as stated by the British Prime Minister today in the North. That's the texter there. And the DUP would agree in the morning to the Windsor Agreement if they were going to have the position of First Minister in the North. There isn't any way they'll agree while Sinn Féin are waiting in the wings to be First Minister, says Gerard, texting in there. And another texter says, surely the Stormont break is a very dangerous hostage to fortune. It could block a future UK government taking Britain into the single market or customs unions, or also might be used as a block on future EU-wide legislation that might have nothing to do with Northern Ireland, says a texter.
Sorry,
there.
Just on that point, because I think that's an interesting point about the Stormont break as it relates to the Republic of Ireland. Because we know that the reason that Northern Ireland is in the single market is so there's no hard border between the Republic and the North. But if the EU proposes some quite profound change to the single market, and there's no reason to suggest that they wouldn't, and Stormont blocks it,
And there's divergence,
that will raise very serious questions, you know, between North and South and what constitutes, if not a hard border, then certainly a border of sorts into the future.
Right. I will have to take time to digest that, and given the space, I'm sure I can do further research on that.